If you want this podcast free of ads, follow us now on patreon.com/DavidMcWilliams.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It is podcast time. It is the middle of August. And John, you will be very pleased to hear that as you sit baking in Dunleary.
Baking indeed.
I am here in the Adriatic in the pissings of rain. There are storms.
There's a certain amount of satisfaction I get from
I
that.
I know. There are storm clouds. There's lightning. There's thunder. It's those rolling thunder storms, you know, that you get in the Mediterranean around this time of the year.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Fascinatingly, which is a real pain because it's a funny thing, psychologically, when you're in a place like this, you're kind of in a hot place. So you get kind of angry when it's not hot. Do you know what I mean? Like you feel betrayed. Yeah. You say, hold on a second, I want my money back. Yeah. Whereas at home, you don't give a sugar. Like it's raining, yeah, it's a pain in the arse. But, you know, that's what you expect. And it's funny, this is the whole basis of sort of behavioral economics, that it's all about expectations. People's state of mind is all about not so much their reality, but the reality they expect it to be and how much of a deviation it is from reality. You know, it's always that what makes people happy in societies is not what they have, but actually the contrast between what they have and what the other fella has, right?
Yes. Yeah,
that's why inequality corrodes people. And we're going to talk about this today, actually. We're going to talk about the housing market in Ireland and how it has the potential to derail all the achievements of the last 20 years. And there have been so many achievements, as we always say in the podcast. But it's that contrast. So my contrast now is looking at you with the sun coming in the
window. Teddy's ice cream.
And me moping around with sort of sodden sort of Birkenstocky sort of sandally things, thinking, I didn't buy into this. This is what I was doing. But fascinatingly, I think I told you last year, every single summer, almost without fail, in the second or third week of August, this weekend, right?
Yeah.
On the 15th of August, which is the Feast of the Ascension. They call it here Veliki Gospa, okay? Right. The Italians call it Ferragosto. And I'll come back to it. You can almost time your watch to the fact that the weather breaks. And what was incredibly warm weather for about a month totally descends into lightning, thunder, chaos. And it all comes from the River Nile, John. Okay?
Go on.
So what happens is the River Nile, the source of the Nile is in Ethiopia, right?
Yeah.
And there are extraordinarily high mountains in Ethiopia. And the monsoons, the Asian monsoons, deposit loads and loads of water on top of the mountains. And as that water goes into the Nile, you get this kind of shunting on over a period of weeks and a period of months. And the Nile Delta in the Mediterranean, at the very top at Alexandria, becomes completely sodden.
Yes.
And of course, then, that water there in the really high Mediterranean temperature of June and July evaporates.
Yeah.
And what happens here is you can really feel it. A southern wind, a sirocco, comes in about 2 or 3 days before the weather breaks. And that just pushes all this huge amounts of clouds and thunder and lightning, et cetera, all the way up the Adriatic. And it almost always breaks on this weekend. And you get huge. The Egyptians used to call it the Tears of Isis in the Egyptian, in ancient Egypt. The Romans called it Ferragosto. And they still have this holiday, the Italians, on the 15th of August, which is marks the high point of the Italian summer. And it also marked for, because Octavian, who morphed into Augustus, came up with this holiday called Ferragosto, which is basically the party of Augustus, right?
Yeah.
After he won, and it's an interesting thing, after he won the Battle of Actium against Mark Antony and Cleopatra.
Oh, right. Okay. Right.
So it's all tied up with Egypt, right? Yeah. The whole thing's tied up with Egypt. And here in Croatia, the Veliki Gospa is the ascension, right? So it's basically, it marks the end of the summer holidays for them, and it's the end of the season. And of course, what happened was the Christians realized, hold on a second, the Romans have a party at that time, the Egyptians had a party at that time, maybe the Greeks had a party at that time to represent the end of the summer. Shit, we better come up with something. So we came up with the ascension into heaven of Mary.
Yeah, we're not going to be left out of the party.
Exactly. And that's what's happening today. It's brilliant, right? So now, well, we're around here, because Croatia is a Catholic country, right? And it's an old Catholic country. So all around here today, right, they have the Veliki Gospa, which is the ascension, right? So they have a little feast in the morning, the priest goes around, and it's the bells and everything. And then that descends into chaos as they have this crazy party in the afternoon. So it's basically just a pagan festival, prompted by the environment, prompted by the River Nile, prompted by the monsoons in Asia a couple of months ago, and it's an excuse to get hammered.
So you're going on the lash this afternoon?
Exactly, in the Veliki Gospa, the ascension, exactly. That's exactly what happens. And then for the Croats, the summer is over. That's what they say. The Mediterraneans, they say, okay, that's it. It's more or less over now. We've got to go back to work tomorrow.
Right.
And the Italians have this Ferragosto thing.
Is it back to farming then? Because, you know, obviously with the flood of the Egyptian Delta, that's when all the sediment is deposited and all the fresh life and all the crops can be sown again. Is it the same then in Croatia then, that the farmers get back to it and start tilling the land?
I think they get back to it. No, they're waiting for the big one here is the olive harvest. And
okay.
So olives are all planted and everything's cut back in your vines in, I think, February, March.
Right.
And then you allow the vines to grow and then it's back into the fields for the next couple of weeks. And then the big harvest is around October, which is a lovely time to be here because everybody harvests the vines and they begin to make their own wine. Not the highest quality, it must be said. And sometimes when it comes out of a jerry can that has had petrol in it all summer, you should be a little bit suspect, which is why the local Croats put water into their wine.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and they do that. And you know, the Greeks, we're really on a real road. The Greeks used to put water into wine and give it to actors before the Greek theater. And they used to also give it to politicians before they spoke in parliament, in the Greek parliament. And the reason was people are nervous.
Yeah, you get a bit of Dutch courage.
A little bit of courage, you know? And it's the same idea. So the Greeks, you know, Socrates was always talking about having been a little bit hammered before you get up and give your thing, you know? So you can actually express yourself. Anyway.
It's a podcast, isn't it?
Exactly. Enough of that, carry on. Let's talk about important issues of the day, right? Now, what is the most important issue, John, unambiguously in Ireland, is what was revealed last week and this week by Daft, which revealed that there was only, I think, 900 properties available for rent in the country.
I saw that, yeah.
The ongoing and relentless increases in rents in particular, and house prices, but rents in particular. The inability or unwillingness of the state to galvanize its resources to build more houses, because ultimately, no matter what way you spin it, and there's many people involved in ideological arguments about what's the best way to go forward, you solve a housing problem with more houses, not less houses. So the question is, how do you
makes
do
sense.
It, right? But I actually think that this now, the housing crisis, has the ability or threatens all the economic upside potential, everything that we've achieved over the last couple of years, because it has the potential to completely derail the society. And I think that's what might happen.
But you have a look around, though, and there seems to be a hell of a lot more building going on. Now, I don't know if those buildings of, you know, apartment blocks, are they, you know, those apartment blocks that are owned by vulture funds or investment outfits or whatever Are they going to be on the open market, or are they going to be set a really high rental level where they just become exclusive as opposed to...
Yeah, this is the big buy to rent argument, right?
Yes.
We can talk about that in a couple of minutes, but I think what's important is to get a bit of perspective. So let's park that, right? Because as you see, there is a lot of building going on, right? But it's clearly not enough building going on.
Sure. Yeah.
At the right pace, right? But if we go back, John, what really worries me is that all Irish economic crises since we were kids have been homegrown.
They've
got Made in Ireland written on them, okay? That basically Ireland.
Guaranteed Irish.
Guaranteed Irish. Ireland goes bad from the inside out, right?
Yeah.
And it is always, so you go back to the two big crises of our life, our economic lives, our personal lives in Ireland, were the Celtic Tiger and the 2008 crash and the 1980s when we were in school, right? Mm. And the 1980s was a complete lost decade. So if you go back to this, they were entirely manufactured at home by Irish politicians, the main Irish public policy, basically the Irish firmament in...
Talk to me about the 1980s, because I remember that as it's a great decade in terms of it's great crack, there's great music, we had a laugh, but...
We had a laugh,
But we got out as fast as we possibly could.
Well, over 100,000 Irish people emigrated in the early part of the 1980s, right? That's a huge, huge figure. And the reason was the following. You had two, I believe, kind of charlatans, right? One Gareth Fitzgerald and one Charlie Haughey. Now, Gareth Fitzgerald was a social democrat, apparently, but he behaved like a populist, right? He talked the language of probity and financial responsibility, but he actually behaved like Juan Perón. He behaved like an Argentinian, sort of throwing money around, couldn't get the budget under control, all that sort of stuff. And I remember very distinctly what really kind of got in my nerves as a young person beginning to understand that economics was important was, and this again comes back to my dad, and he worked in manufacturing, and manufacturing in Ireland was destroyed under the early Gareth Fitzgerald regimes. Why? Because he was a very enthusiastic advocate of joining the ERM, which was basically shadowing the Deutschmark, which meant the Irish exchange rate was very, very overvalued, given our productivity. And given that the exchange rate was overvalued, we had to put up interest rates hugely in order to justify that overvaluation, attract in money, right?
By the way, just to stop there, was Gareth Fitzgerald an economist by...
Yeah. Which is doubly lamentable, right?
Right.
And so what you have is if you have an overvalued exchange rate and an overvalued real interest rate, it means the cost of capital is hugely expensive vis-a-vis your exporter competitors. And your exchange rate means your cost of production is incredibly expensive when you go to sell abroad. So what you saw was an assault on the manufacturing base, such as it was of the urban working man. I wouldn't say working class man, I mean working man, the man who worked in manufacturing, right? So people like my dad, they were chemicals and paints and basic industries that were feeding the construction industry, largely in the UK. They were exporting to the UK. At the same time, Gareth Fitzgerald got all upset about Bewley's going to the wall, and he organized a subsidy for Bewley's, but this has really got my wick. So there was all these industrial areas of Ireland. So most Irish small towns and cities had small industries.
Yeah.
And those industries were where largely working class and working men went to work. All of those, very few of those people voted Fine Gael.
Mm-hmm.
And in that period of the early 80s, my reading of the situation was that that class that was basically thrown out to pasture in order to protect another class, right? And what happens then, and what really got was when Fitzgerald obviously went for a coffee every morning in Bewley's, which is fine, right? But it's hardly a strategic industry for the country.
So while
manufacturing was all being hammered by an overvalued exchange rate and an overvalued real interest rate, Gareth Fitzgerald was only concerned about bailing out Bewley's, where he was having a coffee reading the Irish Times with his mates. And it came down to class. It all comes down to class, right? And perceptions of what's important. So I think Fitzgerald was a populist masquerading as a social democrat. And of course, Taha was just a populist full stop. Didn't he?
Right.
He didn't even feel he had to worry about his image, right? And so the framework of the discussion, I remember when the 80s, when you and I finished school and most of our friends went to London to work, right?
Yeah.
It was framed between, you know, the evil Charlie Haughey and the good Gareth Fitzgerald. Both of them were equally culpable. And just because Fitzgerald had a sort of a social agenda, which I agreed with on the divorce and all that, it kind of painted him there. But on economics, the stuff that we talk about,
yeah,
they were both equally lamentable. And it was only actually Haughey in 87 who said, okay, the game is up. And then actually tried to reverse everything, tried to balance the books.
What made Haughey change his mind then?
Now, this is a fascinating thing because Haughey won the election in 86, basically saying, don't be worried, we'll just keep spending, we'll keep borrowing, right?
Mm.
And there was a combination of that on the economic front. So mad populism. And of course, he sided with the Catholic Church on all the social issues. So he was trying at the one hand to play the culture war,
right,
traditional culture war.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, so it was basically like Latin America. Like, we'll spend loads of other people's monies and we'll allow the church to run the kip, right? Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll outsource moral issues, even though, you know.
But then he brought in the IFSC, though, didn't he?
So I think what happened to Haughey was the following. I think that Haughey used to surround himself with lots of very wealthy, I mean, this is conjecture, with wealthy people. And the reason he had a U-turn, I think, is that a lot of his wealthy mates said, look, this ship is sinking, right? It wasn't right. some sort of great right. ideological right. thing. I think a lot of his wealthy mates, because he was always in the Cockardie and down in Lecrivan and all those places. Remember there was a restaurant down Dunleary where your man had a roller outside. What was it called? A really posh one on the
Mirabeau.
Seafront. The Mirabeau. And how he used to be always in the Mirabeau, right? And I think basically what happened to him is that, you know, Paul, I think basically a lot of his mates tapped him on the shoulder and said, the ship is sinking. Capital's leaving the country. People have whatever savings they have, they're getting it out, right?
Yeah.
And that was happening all across. Everyone had these accounts. Remember that there was the big scandal of people pretending they lived abroad. They had accounts all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the money was in the Irish banks, but it was actually registered abroad. And I think what basically happened is in 87, also if you think, amazingly, right, the rest of the world boomed in the 80s. America was booming. Britain was booming. West Europe under West Germany was booming. And of course, Ireland was floundering. It was impossible to have constructed a worse economic outlook. But those lads did. And of course, what happens in Ireland is always people emigrate. Like, you know, we emigrated, your elder brother emigrated, most of the lads on our road emigrated. And that basically was happening.
Yeah, so Windsor Park was cleaned out.
Was cleaned out of 19-year-olds, right? Yeah. Everyone just left.
Yeah.
And lots of our mates went to the States, all that sort of stuff. So I think that is, again, it's homegrown. The world was booming, but Ireland went backwards, right? So that's unambiguous our own fault. Then you go to the Celtic Tiger. The Celtic Tiger was just basically, we thought we were going to get rich selling little bits of Ireland to each other with other people's money, right? The housing boom, right?
Yeah.
And of course, Ireland went from being, you know, a country with a banking system to a banking system with a country stuck onto it. So basically this mad, bloated banking system. And it was so obvious to, you know, I think it was obvious to a lot of people. I was publicly, because I had the profile at the time, saying this is ludicrous, but lots of people were saying it in the pub as well.
Yeah,
like this thing is bonkers. So again, entirely homegrown crisis. That and again, all the Irish banks went bust. That's the funny thing. Every single one, not one of them didn't go bust, which is an amazing thing to say. And of course, so the extent of the crisis, although the crisis was around the world, the extent of it was amplified by Irish policy mistakes, right? Now I feel, John, we're here again. Housing crisis all over the world, you know, whether you talk to people in London or New York or Australia, it's all the same. House prices have gone through the roof. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't fix them at home. And my fear is that if Ireland doesn't fix this housing dilemma with muscular seriousness, right? This is a serious threat, that this economy will be derailed.
Okay, Mac, just before we move on, why did Ireland join the ERM? And what would have happened if we stayed out of it?
Okay, so Ireland has always been very, very tricky. I've always found Irish monetary policy very interesting, right? Because Ireland is the only post-colonial country that broke with its colonial masters, okay? The only one, but kept the currency of the Brits, right?
Right.
As if, like, Jesus, just in case we made a mistake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So basically what happened in 1922, Ireland gets independence. The first thing we do on the economic side is tie our currency to sterling. because at the time we were doing 95% of our trade with the UK.
Yeah.
So from 1922.
So that makes sense then. Though it was, it made sense.
1979. Yeah. Well, it means you've no real economic sovereignty. It means you've no monetary sovereignty, right? But what you have then is fiscal sovereignty. So you can adjust your taxes and your spending and all that sort of stuff. But your actual monetary policy, your interest rates, the value of your exchange rate is all London, right?
Okay.
So
okay.
There was a move in the European Union. The European Union was split between two camps. One was called the monetarist camp and one was called the economist camp. So the idea was in the European Union that how do we accelerate economic integration and political integration? Because the European Union, yeah, it started as a trade gig and a customs union, whatever, but it's always been political. Mm. So there were two camps, and one was the way in which we integrate is we gradually trade and trade and trade with each other, and that will force political integration. That was called the economist view. Then there was a monetarist view, which was like, hold on a second, what we really need is to have monetary union, a forerunner to the euro. And if we can have monetary union led by Germany, that monetary union, because exchange rates will be fixed, will lead to more trade, that'll lead to more integration, and ultimately the politics will follow. And so in 1979, the ERM was set up. We joined enthusiastically. We pretended the punt was a hard currency. We devalued it 6 times in the 80s. People don't know. It's like, we're kind of hard, you know? And of course, what happened was the perception, and this is where it's tricky. All politics is tricky. The perception in the world was that Ireland was still part of Britain. And if we, in financial markets.
Okay.
Because we had been up until then, because we'd fixed our currency to sterling. Once we fixed it to the Germans, we were then hostage to German productivity and German monetary policy. And the idea was that the Germans were so anti-inflation that our currency, we'd import disinflation from Germany, meaning our currency would rise and rise and rise, we'd squeeze inflation, and at the end of the day, we would have a much healthier economy. Now, that actually is what happened. But the fallout, the cost of all this, was borne by the manufacturing sector. Now, people, I believe, rather, people who had no feel for industry, right?
Mm.
Some bureaucrats, intellectuals, civil servants, what have you, right? Thought that it would be, the great economics idea is that you can replace some old industry without any dislocation and you can create new industries, right? The problem is, as we see in Trump and Brexit, is that when you destroy something, people get hurt, right? So the manufacturing base of the country was squeezed completely and utterly from interest rates and exchange rates. And that had its expression in incredibly high levels of urban unemployment.
Yeah. Right?
So we had unemployment of 20%, 16%, and it had expressions in very, very high levels of emigration. So that was the cost.
Yeah.
If you're in the insulated class, right? If you're a civil servant, if you're a public servant,
sure,
you're still getting paid. So what you had was the traded side of the economy got really badly damaged by the first few years of European Union integration. But the way in which Ireland bought the whole game off is that the farming sector did extremely well, right?
Right.
Through the CAP.
Yes.
So basically the transfer of income from Europe to agricultural and rural Ireland, which kept rural Ireland in a much better position. So I remember even down in my granny's in the late 70s, I remember there was like an explosion of fellas buying tractors who'd never had tractors before, right?
Right.
Because they had money. And one of the greatest thing a bank could do was lend money, lease lending for tractors to farmers, because farmers' incomes went through the roof with the cap, right?
Yeah.
So they were happy.
Yeah.
Industrial incomes, manufacturing incomes went through the floor. But because those guys didn't vote for Fine Gael, they were largely, insulated by the whole thing, right? So that's what I think happened.
Fast forward a few years, and that it's flipped from buying tractors to buying Range Rovers.
Exactly. Do you remember there was a tractor called a Zetter from Czechoslovakia? Right?
Yeah. Zetters are better.
Exactly. Zetters are better. And there was like Massey Ferguson's and Davy Brown's and fellas talking about tractors. This is when I was a kid. This is my cousins would talk to me about. But the point was, agricultural Ireland got very rich in the first 10 years of European Union membership. Industrial Ireland got very poor. And the fallout of that was the disappearance of the industrial manufacturing class in Dublin, Cork, Waterford as well, you know, cities that had industrial bases,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the legacy of that was the fact that the industrial working class did much worse out of the first 10 or 15 years of European integration than the agricultural laboring class. And yeah. that's just what happened. And again, the politicians played all that off each other. Maybe some of them weren't even aware that this was going on, right? But that's what was going on. And so I've always thought that we probably could have delayed going into the ERM. I thought we could have explained what was going on much more. We were blessed in the 80s. Britain boomed. So as Britain booms, Ireland should always do very well, particularly if you're trading a lot with them. And we just managed to screw it up. And America boomed. And we managed to screw it up. But I suppose, and this is that the stability which was manifest from having that exchange rate tie with the Germans, probably in the 1990s and towards the beginning of the euro, helped in marketing Ireland as a brand and a place you could do business as a multinational. And that commitment. So right. what I'm just saying is that all the policies came right at a certain stage, but in the 80s, certainly one class got profoundly affected badly and another class didn't. And that's what happened.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, so let's fast forward to what's going on now.
Now, okay, so the Central Bank published last week a report on the wealth of Ireland. And it came at the same time as Daft.ie published a report on renting. It shows the wealth of Ireland has gone through the roof. It's now 1 trillion euros is the wealth of our country. So what they're basically is they're adding up all the wealth. So housing wealth, savings, finance,
yeah.
pensions, etc., right? And what you see is about 70% of all wealth in Ireland is in houses.
Okay.
What has happened is that people who own property have got rich by just sitting on their Swiss, by doing nothing, right?
Yeah.
So you might add, well, isn't the wealth of the country a good thing? You know, if the wealth is going up, isn't that a good thing, right? And it is a good thing. I tell you, the wealth of the country went up by, it's now 1 trillion, which is 200,000 euros for every man, woman, and child in this country, right? Which is
right.
a phenomenal figure.
Yeah.
And it went up by about 97 billion in the first quarter of this year alone. But
wow.
why did it go up?
Jesus.
Why did it go up? It went up largely because house prices continue to rise.
So this is just wealth on paper, though. You know,
this
it's
just
not
wealth
real
on paper,
wealth.
Right? No, and this is exact the point. Let's say good and bad wealth, right? Bad wealth is wealth that accrues to people for doing nothing, right?
Mm.
Good
yeah.
wealth. So that's like your house. You're just sitting on your arse. The thing goes up. Nobody benefits except for you, right?
Yeah.
Number one. The people who actually not only don't benefit, basically when house prices go up, it drives a wedge between people who have houses and people who don't have houses, right?
Sure.
So we're impoverishing an entire part of our country simply because as house prices increase, Everything else decreases relative to that. So the amount of work you have to do to buy a house diminishes, right?
So basically,
what happens when you have inflation in an asset like housing, it means deflation in everything else you do, right? So you got to work harder, you got to earn more money. So basically, it's just a game between asset owners and renters, right? And the renters are now suffering badly. The second part of it is good wealth is the sort of wealth that you see generated in a country like, let's say, Japan. Now, so you have little companies. We talked about Taiwan last week, right?
Yes.
Companies involve supply chain. They're creating new products. Those products are competitive. That's causing dividends. It's causing employment. It's causing innovation. The engineers, you know, in Taiwan are doing some, you know, really funky stuff, all that sort of stuff. That's good wealth. But we have bad wealth, which is what I would call the wealth of a drone class. You know, the drone and the worker bees.
Yes, need
the
drone. Who doesn't
want to be a drone, right? If I come back in reincarnation, if we go back to India, I'm going to come back as a drone, just hanging out. Me and the queen bee, you know, chilling out, okay? Well, the worker bees. No, but we've created a drone class in Ireland. Now, what happens? I know it's a good image, actually. What happens is, John, it means that another thing happens, right? Not just is there a wealth divide between the haves and the have-nots, et cetera, but there also is a generational divide between the young and the old, because the old own the assets. So you're rewarding the old who are becoming less productive, where you should be looking after the young who are going to be the future. And then there's another problem with it, which I dislike, is that it creates an inherited class, right? So it means that rich kids who inherit money, inherit the wealth that nobody can achieve through working and hard work and saving, right? So you create not only this, you bake in inequality into the system. So what you want is a country where inequality, it always exists, but where it's fluid, so the people at the top can lose as much as the people at the bottom can gain. So you people move up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
But once you bake in inequality through the housing market, it means idiots at the top. And we all know them, like sons of rich people, usually gobshites, right? They actually end up,
you know,
they receive nothing. They're doing nothing. They get this boom, big inheritance of $500,000. They then can buy houses. They then can create wealth where the hardworking other people who don't have that inheritance can't. So you bake in inequality, right? And that's what's happening in the country. All the while, the people who can't afford houses are being shunted into the rental sector. And then the rental sector, therefore, is becoming tighter and tighter and tighter. And of course, what you've seen in the DAF report is the rental sector is completely dysfunctional. It's like 900 properties for rent.
Yes, in the whole country,
right?
Bonkers.
So what we've got to do is we've got to be incredibly serious about building houses. Now, that means we've got to be serious about land use. That means we've got to be serious about land hoarding. That means we've got to be serious. And you come back, remember your buy-to-rent idea, right?
Yes, yeah.
The huge dilemma there, one is buy-to-rent is creating huge wealth for largely offshore pension funds, right? That's one thing, okay? But the second thing is those big players are buying up large tracts of land and they're waiting. And they're not building. They're waiting for the prices to go up, right? So the way in which you change that dynamic is you've got to introduce tax on sites. And that is this site value tax that we've talked about time and time again. What it does is it penalizes hoarding and it rewards developing.
And wasn't this something that they were trying to address recently? But have they not kind of got to grips with this yet?
Well, you see, the very statistic of the 1 trillion in wealth, and the 200,000 for every man, woman, and child, and the fact that of that 1 trillion, about 700 billion is in housing wealth.
Mm.
The party that goes to the election and says, we're going to increase housing wealth, or house taxation, we're going to tax property, or we're going to tax sites, will probably not get elected. Because you have a significant chunk of the population that's doing okay, even a significant chunk of the population that's been locked out.
Mm.
The people who are doing okay are older, they vote more, they're much more active in all sorts of quasi-political games, I would say. Whereas, like, you know, residents' associations, these sort of things, they're active in the community, right?
Yes.
The younger people who are working are not that active and they don't vote. So what is happening, the scam in Ireland is that the older people are assuming that their wealth is going to be guaranteed by younger people paying excessive house prices. So it's like a Ponzi scheme, right?
Yeah.
Or a pyramid scheme. You can only get out of the top if there's a young person at the bottom is prepared to coming buy in. Your yeah. expensive yeah. house, yeah. right? But eventually you run out of people. And that's what's happening. Home ownership in Ireland, this is an extraordinary statistic, John. The share of 25 to 34-year-olds, the yeah. share of home ownership has halved in the last 15 years. So in 2004, it was 60% of 24 to 35-year-olds owned their own home. It's yeah. now 27%. Wow. So this idea that Ireland wow. is a home-owning democracy is gone. We are no longer a home-owning democracy. We are an excessively jaundiced democracy where lots of people own very expensive homes, but the idea is it's not open to anybody. And those people who used to own are now in the rental market. And that's why things are so tight in the rental market.
Yes.
So we just have to build and build and build. And a party has to introduce a value tax on sites. The only way that we will reduce what is basically, it's the only way we will bring efficient land into use, right? That's the only yeah. way.
And you're talking about a heavy tax. Like you're talking about a tax the shite out of it.
It has to be material. It has to be material because, and I'll just leave it there. Every time the wealth of housing goes up, the worth of everything else goes down. That's something people have to get into their heads, right? Which is, we go out to work. That's what we do for our income.
Yeah.
As house prices rise, we reward the drone class who are doing nothing but sitting on their holes, right? But not only are we rewarding the drone class, we're penalizing the workers who are going out to work. So yeah. every single time wealth goes up in houses, it actually devalues and undermines everything else we do. And that is a recipe for political, now that's the most important point, chaos. Because if you keep undermining a person's work by saying, well, you know what, you're going to have to work for another 5 years for the deposit,
yes,
another 10 years for the deposit, they're eventually just going to give up.
Yeah.
And when they give up, they're eventually going to vote for the party that says, we're going to take all the wealth back.
Viva Revolution.
Well, you said it, babe. While I have you there, listen, I just want to say thank you so much to all our Patreons who really supported myself and John throughout the last nearly 3 years, man.
3 years, wow.
Oh, it's a long time. I thought it only started last week. It's such good crack, though, isn't it?
It is.
It's like having the dream gig, you know. Thank you very, very much. And if you do want to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/David McWilliams. You get ad-free, you get courses, you get chats, you can ask me questions, all sorts of stuff, and you really become part of the gang. So that's patreon.com/David McWilliams. And again, thank you very much.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.